Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks so much for listening. Another crazy busy week in politics. One of those that you start off, you don't really know what's going to happen, and then just a flood of activity. That's the Trump administration, right? We thought the president was going to fight about this citizenship question. He gave up that fight, but came up with this other idea. We'll talk about that. We're awaiting the Mueller testimony. We found out that's going to be delayed a week, but it's still going to be happening within the next couple weeks. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the border detention facilities, Mike Pence visiting those this week. And we'll also talk about this crazy attack with Antifa on one of our guests named Andy Ngo, who's been making the rounds. He was beaten up, a journalist, often writes about conservative issues, been really adopted by those on the right. We'll talk to him in a moment. But we begin this week with Jackie Speier, a longtime congresswoman from the San Francisco Bay Area. She's a Democrat. She's on the House Armed Services Committee and the House Intelligence Committee, two of the most important committees. We talked to her about a whole lot of things coming up. So here is our conversation with Congresswoman Jackie Speier. She's joining us from Capitol Hill.
Congresswoman, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
Yes, the first time. Great to be with you, Alex.
So let's talk to begin on the issue of citizenship. There's been this big debate about whether the question of are you a citizen would be on the census or not. The president saying that it will not, but issuing an executive order about the citizenship issue. Here's what he had to say.
I am hereby ordering every department and agency in the federal government to provide the Department of Commerce with all requested records regarding the number of citizens and non-citizens in our country. They must furnish all legally accessible records in their possession immediately.
What do you make of that? And do you think that, are you concerned about a potential national database of, you know, citizenship information?
Well, I must tell you, Alex, when I was listening to him, I was shaking my head thinking, is this the beginning of a police state in this country? This is a president who hates to lose, and so he is now attempting to, get it another way, and yet those are not documents that are necessarily all coordinated and then put into a huge database. So, yeah, I'm very troubled by it. The question becomes, how is he going to finance that? Because it's going to take time and effort, and he doesn't have the authority because that comes from the Congress. So I don't know how much of this is face-saving or how much of this is something we should be very concerned about.
But doesn't he have a right to know who's a citizen and who's not a citizen in this country? I mean, the citizenship question was asked on the census decades ago.
Well, it was up until 1950 when it was discontinued. And it was discontinued in part because we weren't getting an accurate count of everyone who was living in the United States. You don't want to have a chilling effect in terms of what the actual population is in the country. And for states like California, it's very important because funding on the federal level is coordinated through population numbers that come out of the census. So we are in a position of losing a lot of money in California if there is this chilling effect in terms of not answering the questions.
And Attorney General Barr suggesting that apportionment, meaning the amount of congressional members each state gets, could be determined based off of this new national database.
So in truth, if that question was on the census and then used in dealing with the determination of how many seats per state, California could actually lose a seat.
Well, let's talk about another issue, which is the issue of Robert Mueller's testimony before Congress next week. You are going to be one of the members of Congress who have an opportunity to actually ask him questions under oath. What do you want to know? What's your question?
I think my number one question would be, how much of your investigation was hampered by the fact that WhatsApp and other encrypted messaging centers were used by those that you were looking into? And I think furthermore, I would ask the question that if the Office of Legal Analysis, the OLA at the Justice Department had not provided this guidance, which has been in effect now for maybe 5 to 10 years, that prevents a sitting president from being indicted. If that guidance wasn't in effect, would you have recommended the president be indicted for obstruction of justice?
Mueller has suggested that his report is his testimony. He has nothing new to add. What are you expected to gain out of this?
So the report is over 400 pages. I would venture to say most Americans haven't read it, and frankly, they shouldn't be required to read it. I think by his testifying, we're going to be able to shine a bright light on that report. Even if he does nothing more than read from that report, it's going to provide greater clarity to the American people. We have to remember that Mr. Barr, our Attorney General, spun that report in a way that was not reflective of its reality, and that's why Robert Mueller sent not one but two letters to the Attorney General saying, you have misrepresented my report. So this gives him an opportunity, as the author of the report, to speak very directly to the American people about what he found.
Are you expecting that this will change the impeachment calculus or potentially put more pressure on Speaker Pelosi to bring up the impeachment inquiry?
I don't believe that it's probably going to change the calculus in terms of impeachment. You know, time is running out to really process an impeachment inquiry. That doesn't mean we shouldn't actually do the groundwork in terms of asking the questions. One of the issues I'm very concerned about is that I don't think there really was a counterintelligence evaluation, a fulsome evaluation done by Robert Mueller. And that's something that the House Intelligence Committee needs to do, because the efforts by the Russians to intervene in our election are copious. I mean, there are so many incidents, more than 270 actually contacts with the Trump campaign by Russians, and some 35 meetings took place. I mean, that is remarkable and very disturbing that our adversary had so ingratiated itself into the Trump campaign. And then, most importantly, is the meetings, the numerous meetings and the numerous contacts that Paul Manafort, Richard Gates, and Mr. Kilimnik had, which they shared polling data. Not just the horse race question, but what's called the crosstabs, the really granular information that can be used by those that know campaigns to target specific people. And the fact that that was shared is truly telling.
Of course, Paul Manafort being the former campaign chairman, Rick Gates being the former deputy campaign chairman, and the other gentleman being a member that is close to Vladimir Putin in Russia. Let's talk about another big issue right now, which is of concern to so many Californians, and that is what's going on at the border detention facilities. I know you're going to visit these facilities, as so many members of Congress have. We've seen protesters at different congressional offices around California saying that these detention centers need to be closed. Do you think that they need to be closed?
Absolutely, they need to be closed. I made a trip to McAllen, Texas, and Brownsville last year about this time. I took some 23 members of Congress. We're returning there this year with about 20 members of Congress, and I am concerned that what we're going to see is that the numbers of those crossing the border, moving through these detention facilities, have only grown. The issue that we raised last year was separating children from their parents at the border, and how dangerous it was in terms of affecting that child for the rest of their life. The American Pediatrics Association has opined on a number of occasions that the architecture of the brain is permanently damaged by separating these children from their parents. What we do know is that virtually everyone that comes across this border seeking asylum has a sponsor in the United States. That sponsor has to, by credit card, pay for a bus ticket for each of the people in that family to go to the sponsor's location. We should move that process along much quicker. We do not need to spend a lot of money, as much as $700 a day, to house people in what are extraordinarily poor conditions.
So is your suggestion essentially, instead of staying in those detention centers, they should be staying with sponsors?
That's right. Now, they get an ankle bracelet, so you're able to determine where they are. They have a date when they've got to return for their asylum hearing. And that is the way we should be doing it. That's how you comply with the law on asylum seekers. That's something the president has basically ignored. And so the stay in Mexico approach that is now being used has many of these immigrants staying in Mexico waiting for their asylum hearings. But again, we have a situation where we don't have enough asylum judges, immigration judges, and many of these asylum seekers aren't represented by counsel as well.
Let's talk for a moment about the issue of gun control, which I know is really personal for you. Many of our viewers in Northern California know your story really well. And some of our viewers in Southern California may not know your story as well, which involves Jonestown. You actually went there with a member of Congress who was killed in this. You were shot five times. Of course, 900 people there ended up committing suicide back in 1978. For you, is the issue of gun control especially personal, and how has that experience shaped your perspective when we bring up guns so often in Congress now?
Well, of course, it affected me personally and profoundly. I am, you know, very scarred around my body, and it's a daily reminder. I think about all the others who have been victims of gun violence, have survived. They're scarred for the rest of their lives. I carried the assault weapon ban in California many years ago, and I was able to use my personal experience to make the case that being shot by an assault weapon has profound impacts on one's physical and emotional life.
So we go from that, which is the heaviest experience possible. I know you've never been on our show. We like to have a little bit of fun. So we play some games. This is called Either Or. And this is where we ask you a few questions that are fun, light. You can pass if you want to. But these are a few either or. You pick either this or that, okay? So we get to know you a little bit better. All right?
All right.
You ready?
Okay.
First one
I'm
is
ready.
Beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Giants or A's?
Oh, come on, Giants.
Steph Curry or Klay Thompson?
Steph Curry.
iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Dine in or take out?
Take out.
And finally, dogs or cats?
Oh, dogs.
Hey, you didn't pass.
We're getting a new puppy.
Oh, you are?
We're getting a new puppy.
What
kind? Yes, tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
What kind?
It's a golden doodle.
Oh, God, those are cute.
Our yellow lab of 15 years passed on just 3 months ago.
Oh, sorry to hear
and
that.
And we're homeless and homesick.
Do you have a name for the new dog yet?
Well, we're negotiating it. My husband wants to call her Emma. And Emma was my grandmother's name, so I may actually allow him to do that.
Oh, very nice. Our thanks to Congresswoman Jackie Speier. What we can't play here on the podcast because of music rights issues is that her favorite song was Aretha Franklin's Respect. So watch the TV version at youtube.com/AlexMichelson, and you can see her dancing. Our next conversation this week is with Andy Ngo. He was beaten up badly by Antifa during this protest at the end of June, gotten a whole lot of attention. He came and visited us in studio to talk about his experience and talk about why it was so important for him to speak out. Here's that conversation. Journalist Andy Ngo was attacked recently by a group calling themselves anti-fascist demonstrators. This happened in Portland, Oregon. Ngo suffered a brain hemorrhage in the incident. In the weeks since, everyone from House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy on the right to Vice President Joe Biden on the left have been talking about Andy Ngo. Andy is an editor at the Quillette. He joins us now to talk about that. Andy, welcome to The Issue Is.
Thank you for having me on.
First question is, how are you feeling?
Better than before. You can see on my face that the bruising and swelling has gone down a lot. I'm just focused on the next step of recovery because I was been dealing with a brain injury.
And that's a look at some of the initial injuries from that incident itself. So take us back to that day. There's this protest happening. Antifa organizers are doing. You've covered them many times before. You thought about wearing a helmet and then said, I'm not going to wear a helmet because I don't want to draw attention to myself. You're in there. The protest is happening. You got a GoPro. What happens?
This is on the 29th of June. Portland has had numerous riots since 2016, particularly from radical left-wing activists and left-wing militants. On the 29th, I came there to document it, as I have done many other ones. When we were in the heart of downtown, steps away from the central police precinct, the sheriff's office, in the middle of the day, this mob felt emboldened to attack me, and it was completely unprovoked on my part. It was the first contact was to the back of my head, very hard. I'd never been in a fight. Took me a few seconds to realize I was even hit. I didn't know really what had happened, and before I could center myself again to the ground, the punches kept coming from every direction, to my head, to my face, and their hands were, these weren't just bare fists hitting me. These people who were dressed head to toe in black and masks were wearing tactical gloves that have fiberglass material on the knuckles. So the video that's now gone viral that you just played is the second half of the beating, so there was actually quite a bit more. They ripped my earlobe during that attack. I was bleeding. I was dazed. And when I thought they were done, then the other people who were cheering them on started pelting me with eggs, objects, milkshakes, right in the face, to the head. So I couldn't even see which way to leave. And throughout all this, I kept thinking, where are the police?
And where were they?
They weren't there, and they never intervened at any point.
Did anybody try to help?
I see now in the video that there were some people who were attempting to move themselves in front of me, but they were unsuccessful. I don't know who those people were. What I saw and remember was a mob beating, and as I was walking away, they were laughing, and somebody said, I got owned, and they laughed.
And you had covered them before. You think that you were targeted because of that?
Oh, most definitely. What had happened is weeks before this demonstration, Rose City Antifa had put out a post naming me and rallying for people to come, promising physical confrontation. That was the word they used. So Portland police and authorities were aware that they were planning and premeditating violence. My question over and over is, why does the Portland police not intervene? Because this was not the first time. There were other people who were seriously injured that day and going months back as well.
So these people call themselves anti-fascists. We have seen them many times in California. We've been out covering them. Some of them have been nice to the media. Some of them have been very nasty to the media, me included, and some of our reporters included as well, in a way you don't often see. You have seen sort of an outpouring of support, not only from those on the right, really been adopted by those on the right, but some on the left as well. When you hear Joe Biden, other people coming to your defense, what goes through your mind?
I have a lot of gratitude. I think some people have asked me, are you upset that not more Democrats have come out? I'm not. I know it's unfortunate that some have turned this into a partisan issue when it's not. It's the beating of me is an attack on not just free speech, but freedom of the press. At the same time, what's been deafening is the silence of the mayor in Portland and those on city council, which have not heard from.
So would you go back? Would you cover more Antifa events? Was this worth it for you to do this?
It's not worth it to suffer a brain bleed. However, what I've been focusing on since the attack is continuing to speak out, as difficult as it is, because I want the public to face the brutality of this movement. I never call them anti-fascists. I don't give them that propaganda win. Their tactics violence is a feature of their movement. It's not a bug, and they're agitating for a political revolution. So people need to recognize how dangerous this group of people calling themselves Antifa are.
You've been described a lot in a lot of the media as a conservative journalist. I know you don't like that label. You prefer not to have labels. But I'm interested in your background because you're Vietnamese, you're openly gay. How would you describe your political worldview?
So I'll borrow some of the language from the progressives. My lived experience informs a lot of how I cover Antifa in the columns that I write, in the features. My parents were refugees to the United States from Vietnam, and they have actually lived through a Marxist revolution. So these masked individuals who are not just street hooligans, they actually have a coherent ideology and a political agenda that they're working towards. Most of them, I would say actually all of them, are middle class white people who have no idea what it's like to actually live through a communist revolution. My parents did. They suffered political persecution. My father was sent to re-education camp, my mother labor camp when they were very young. And so that type of trauma was something that they passed on to their children, my sister and I. And that informs my coverage of far left militant movements.
So what do you want people to take away from your story? Because some people in your situation may not be speaking out now, because in some ways it's putting more of a target on your back, potentially, with these people. But you find it important to speak out on shows like this. What is your main message?
Well, this is not just a story of one journalist getting beaten. It's a warning. Portland is a harbinger and a warning to cities across this country of what happens when, for political reasons, politicians are handcuffing police and turning a blind eye to far-left militancy. There's been a lot of attention focused rightfully in recent years on the far right, but there's a blind spot in mainstream media and in the eyes of most people when it comes to extremism, violent extremism on the far left.
And you're trying to get that message out. So,
absolutely.
So you're going to continue to write, but you say next time maybe bring some security with you?
Yes, I can no longer be naive enough to think that Portland police will actually enforce the law.
Well, we're sorry that you're suffering, but we're grateful that you're speaking out. We're glad that you came on the show today. Our thanks to Andy Ngo and President Trump speaking out about Andy Ngo, showing his support for him as well this week. So that is all for this week's edition. We hope that you'll check out some of our other recent podcasts, including a sit-down last week with Dean Shermay. Also, last week's show was preempted on TV in Los Angeles, so you can watch that on my YouTube page and also listen to the podcast as well. Thank you so much for subscribing. Thank you for support. Please send me notes. Let me know what you think about the show or ways we can improve it or what you like, don't like. I'm at Alex Michelson in social media. And please tell your friends about The Issue Is as well, and hope you subscribe and review and all that good stuff. So next week, Tommy Lauren is going to be back with us. She is one of our most controversial and often most popular guests. So we'll be talking with her and who knows who else. And who knows what's going to happen next week. But thanks so much for joining us this week on The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson. Have a great one.